Bergeron.
I said he's MVP of the league.
Rich Keefe.
Sing along with me.
Dale and Keefe.
Dale, you're like an icon in this city, and I just want to say thank you.
Also, at one point he was referred to as the Godfather. Icon, is there one that you prefer, Dale?
Night King.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Hour number three, Dale and Keefe. Sports Radio WEEI, the Stanley Cup Final resumes tonight. Then you get an extra day off in there. When they switch cities, they've built in the extra day off.
Yeah, it's such a long flight.
So they don't, from St. Louis to here on a charter. I mean,
brutal.
It takes 2.5 hours
right.
or so. So they will not play Wednesday, which would be an every other day type of thing. They will play Thursday. We know that no matter what happens tonight, you have a game five on Thursday. Now, if the Bruins were to win tonight,
yes.
It could end theoretically on Thursday.
It could. And then maybe a parade on Saturday. We don't know. TBD on that. And they could win on home ice, which is pretty cool. You know, with all the Boston championships that we've had, there's been a lot of them that they've won on the road, right? And again, it's a talk about a ridiculous topic to even bring up just because they've won so much. Like, most teams just want to be in there, they don't care where they win it. But when you're like, oh, well, the Red Sox have won, you know, in other places, and blah, blah, blah. If the Bruins could win on home ice, it'd be pretty special.
The Twitter site Boston Sports Info has got a great breakdown. They just tweeted out a few minutes ago. This is Boston versus St. Louis in the playoffs since 1969.
It has not gone well for them.
Boston against St. Louis in the playoffs is 19-3.
Oh, boy.
If you add up the points, goals, runs, accumulated.
Okay.
Boston 132, St. Louis 65. More than a 2-1 margin.
Yeah, a little lopsided.
As they point out, it has basically been a curb stomping for 50 Oof. Years or so.
Yeah, it's been.
Now, history doesn't mean anything about tonight. I understand.
It doesn't.
That.
Nope. They have different players now. That is altogether different. But just watching the first three games, I mean, it is clearly the Bruins are the better team. The Blues are going to try to, you know, dirty it up, try to hurt some guys and do whatever they can to, you know, steal another game. But I think this one is pretty much over. The Bruins solved their power play. They figured that out. They were able to beat Bennington a whole bunch of times. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm having a hard time.
Don't use much of it. I think of the 8 minutes of power play time that they could have had.
Just score right away.
I think they used a grand total of 2 minutes and 6 seconds.
Yeah, pretty good.
In the four power plays. They go 4-for-4 on the power play with 4 shots on goal.
Yeah, that's insane.
Shooting percentage is pretty good when you have 4 shots and all of them end up in the back of the net.
I mean, at what point do you have to just say, you know what, we need to stop taking penalties. We need to stop being dumb.
See,
that's not how they do it, I guess.
I don't think that they've got any other formula to win this
thing.
Well,
Berube doesn't like the calls. That's the thing.
Honestly,
like, well, he's like, we're the least penalized team. Like, yeah, no, that's first of all not true. But okay, in this series, you are committing penalties. Like, if you showed
yeah,
each
I'd love
one
to
of
know
them,
which one
right,
he
good question.
Thinks, you know, well, that shouldn't have been a power play for Boston, or
right.
that shouldn't have been. You know, the
matching minors thing with Chara, if you wanted to say that should have been a
don't
penalty.
Don't take either
like,
of them.
You're right, but.
By the way, you gain. If you're St. Louis, Patrick Maroon is sitting for 2 minutes, Zdeno Chara is sitting for 2 minutes, you win St. Louis
exactly.
in that.
And so that was one of the penalties, but again, if you're going to complain about that one, it doesn't really make any sense, because it's not like they only called it on Maroon. So I don't think they've really been hurt by calls. I think it's been pretty even. Not necessarily the power plays, I'm saying, but just the calls. When you look at what is interference, what is slashing, what is whatever, I think it's been pretty fair.
St. Louis has had 10 power play opportunities in the three games. Boston has had 14.
Yeah.
But think about what the difference is between you had the two-minute minor because Matt Grizzlick got driven into the middle of next week.
Yeah, and that was 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
You had two power plays because you ran the goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
And got minor penalties. So here's an idea. Don't, as you said, don't do dumb stuff.
Right.
And maybe the power plays are pretty much even in this series.
But if you were St. Louis, if you were them, you're down 2-1, would you try to do even more of what you've been doing and try to get the different results? Or wouldn't you just say, hey, guys, we need to take it down a notch a little bit. Let's try to beat them 5-on-5. Again, I don't think they're better 5-on-5. They're not, but don't you give yourself a little bit of a better chance playing that way?
You'd think, but they don't seem to. It is in their DNA here. Look, the San Jose Sharks said it in the aftermath of losing to St. Louis in the Western Conference Final. I'll say it, having watched three games, they're a dirty hockey team.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
You know, that David Pastrnak could have been knocked out of the playoffs if Shen had done what he was trying to do because he was trying to hit Pastrnak right square in the head.
Oh, yeah, he avoided it. Like, he got out of the way just in time, or otherwise that could have been real ugly. You know, David Backes, every time he's out there on the ice, it seems like they're throwing a two-hand shot to the face. Yeah, oh, yeah, they're going to get headshotted left and right. And they have already tried to take a run at Tukarask more than any of the other three teams combined, you know, just in these three games. So they're sort of playing on that edge. Now, I didn't watch every single second of their games against Winnipeg and Dallas, and I did watch a little bit more against San Jose. I don't know if they were doing this as much. I know San Jose was complaining about it, and they said that they were, and that seemed to have come as advertised.
We ran some footage on Saturday night's pregame show on Nesson showing some of the plays where they took Sharks players out.
Mm-hmm.
Pavelski, a headshot, coming off a concussion issue. Now, Carlson was hurt going into the series. We kind of eliminated that one as a possibility. But the Thomas Hertl
yeah.
shot.
Yeah.
They were trying to put him out, and they did put him out.
Yeah. See, that's
and they're trying to put Bruins players out.
It's like Greg Williams coaching the team, and I don't know if these guys get bonuses for all this stuff or whatever, but they just feel like this is the only way we're going to do it. Like, you got some skill in a guy like Tarasenko, but then other than that, you're kind of you don't have an advantage anywhere. And we've talked to a bunch of different hockey guests throughout this time, before the series, during the series, say where does St. Louis have an advantage? And they don't. Like, the reality is they don't. Like, usually a team has something. Like, well, they're a little bit faster, or they're a little bit deeper, or their goalie might be better, or whatever it is. They don't have a single advantage, and so they feel like the only way they can do it is to sort of cross the line. I don't know if it's intimidation or just strictly injury, what they're looking for, but if the refs are calling everything, and they have been, now you got to kill the penalties, and they can't do that. At least they couldn't in Game 3, and I would think it's going to be more like that than the first two games if it happens again tonight.
We mentioned that there's a difference of 4 in the power play opportunities for these two teams. The Bruins have had 4 more power play tries than St. Louis in this series. One of the power play tries the Bruins had was because Craig Berube lost the challenge on the goal in the last minute on Saturday night.
Would you have challenged that?
I understood why he challenged it,
yeah.
But I also understood why he lost the challenge, because the NHL, to their credit, is good about, they put out an email almost immediately. Those of us who were in the hockey media get it. I got the email. It said, no, this is why it was onside,
yeah.
Because Joel Edmondson knocked the puck back into his own end.
Right.
So it's not offside, even if Pastrnak, or in this case it was Nordstrom, even if he is offside. I understand why Berube challenged it, because it basically made the difference in the hockey game. But that was a power play try.
Yeah, that was one of those.
We talked about the two running the goaltender ones. We talked about the Grizzlick headshot. So there's your difference.
Yeah, no, it was. And because that was in a spot where you say, all right, you know, you win the challenge and it's 2-0. You lose the challenge and there's a good chance it's 4-0.
And it was.
And that's exactly what it ended up being. And you're right, watching it in real time. First of all, I hate that you can replay offsides. We've talked about that all season, but I hate that you could do that. And they showed it, and yeah, the skate was just ahead of the puck, but then ultimately that's not what it mattered anyway. Man, that was tough. That was the game. You know, now it's 4-0. That's on you. And then at that point, there was no coming back.
Here's Tuukka Rask post-game Saturday night talking about all of this.
Just to pick up on that for a second, Tuukka, Perron actually got in your face there with about 20 seconds. What were the two of you saying there?
No, he was just saying I was diving.
Didn't you say anything to him?
Yeah, no, I wasn't. And I was trying to get out of there.
And he was also laughing in Perron's face.
Yeah, just laughing in his face. What do you do? That's just going to... Like, Perron getting into Tuca's face versus Tuukka just laughing at Perron, that is so much more annoying to Perron than anything that he could have done to Tuukka, right? Like, if you think you're getting in his head and then he's just looking at you and laughing, like, at that point, you're just going to skate away. Be like, this isn't working. Hey, guys, us kind of chirping Tuukka and crashing into him doesn't appear to be working.
In the Stanley Cup final a year ago, Perron was playing for the Vegas Golden Knights. Gerard Gallant took him out of the lineup after a while because he was doing nothing.
Yeah, like what's
and
what
and Gallant here? Benched him. He said, "You know what? We're going to dress somebody else." You look at this series so far. Perron's doing nothing.
Yeah, what are you going to do with him? He's not really helping you much. Now Sundqvist comes back. Obviously, they took advantage of him not being in there. Not that he's the world's greatest player, but still a regular guy for them. One of the guys that kills penalties a little bit for them. So he's back in there. that obviously helps them, but I wonder if they make any other lineup changes just because they got to try something. You can't give up seven like that and just trot the whole same team back.
Let's get back to the calls with you guys. 617-779-7937. Dave Poulin will join us at 1 o'clock. T is on the cell phone. Hey, T.
Question.
Yes, sir.
What's up, T?
If you're playing in the Stanley Cup Finals, okay, and the other team's most talented player is coming across your blue line, inside your blue line, with his head down, are you going to tell me if you have a chance to paste him into next week, you're not going to do that?
Do you take a, do you paste him or do you I'm answering question, your question. T, let me answer
you.
Are you pasting him or are you taking a headshot at him?
No, I am going to body check him into next year.
That is not you what that's yes, not yes, what yes, Shen no. was doing.
You should body check him into next year.
You should, right, Keith? Thank you for you answering the question. Okay, so now let's take it to the next step. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, considering that Shen had him in his crosshairs, if his intention was, I am just gonna lay him out no matter what, he would have.
He tried.
Oh, time out. Let me finish. He tried to body check
T,
him clean.
T, believe it or not, this is not a monologue,
no, he
T.
Went
it's
up
a
to
discussion.
His head.
By his arm.
Nah, he tried to hit him in the head.
That's why his arm was tucked in.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
T, and honest to God, I don't know what game you were watching, but it's a different game than everybody else.
In your life. You never watched gates in your life. Shut your mouth. You don't have a clue. If he wanted to kill him, he would have killed him. But because he kept his arm...
He tried to. He missed, T. What are you talking about? He missed him.
He tried.
He tried him clean. Yes, he did. But if he wanted to do it dirty, it would have been done.
T, where'd you play?
Forever on skates.
Where'd you play, T?
You are a buffoon.
T, where'd you play?
Where'd you play?
Where'd you play?
You're a buffoon.
Where'd you play?
You're a buffoon.
Where'd you play? Where'd you play?
Let the record show T hung up.
T's never played either.
No.
That's kind of
no.
Thing. And guess what? If you did, really doesn't matter. But T's never played either.
No.
He couldn't even answer replay. He had a golden opportunity to tell Boston Radio his history, where he played. Maybe a little ECHL action. Have you played there? A little AHL?
I'm going to guess it was probably about the same level as Wiggy's team up at Hockey Town.
Maybe he's still active then.
He might be on Wiggy's team playing. For crying out loud.
No, but I really feel like that was, he was going, he left his skates.
Oh, he
like,
was
I mean,
trying
he
to take,
launched at
he
him.
Was trying to take Pasternak's head off.
Yeah, he was like going on
a, Pasternak thankfully saw it coming.
He was going for like, it looked like he jumped off a trampoline trying to springboard his shoulder into his face. And he missed like a buffoon. To steal a word from T. T. How are we going to call a grown man T? What is that?
Well, he couldn't spell the rest.
No,
he
I guess
it
stop
T
there.
For
Let's
Terrence.
Be honest.
What is it?
T for Terrence.
Let's call him Terrence. T.
And
call me T.
He'd never been able to spell the rest of it. So.
Where'd you play? Where'd you play? He didn't play anywhere.
Andy's in New Hampshire. Hey, Andy.
What's going on, guys?
How are you?
That was the entertainment for the day.
Yeah,
hey, you know, the only thing that I thought could come and surprise us with the St. Louis team was what exactly Binnington had to bring to it. And obviously the only thing is a huge five hole, which they have absolutely destroyed over the last few games. And, you know, their defense, their size of them, I thought they were better than the Columbus defense, but they're not. That Columbus defense, I think, caused some matchup problems because of their size early in the series. But never in my life, and no one can tell me they thought, that our fourth line would be this effective offensively. I mean, come on.
Well,
they've
been effective the whole playoff season. I mean, they've been good.
Yeah, but this
well,
is
next level.
That's
what I'm
level.
Saying.
No,
did anybody is... expect that, though?
No. Not,
I mean,
not to be this.
You know, the first line, the only reason why they lost game two it's because the first line decided to take a break. I mean, maybe they're fighting off injuries, whatever. And Bergeron was mad in game three, which I like to see. That tells me this team probably won't be going back to St. Louis. Have a good one, boys.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, Nordstrom had 7 goals in the regular season. You know, Achari had 6. Corrali had 8. And so for them to be almost as reliable, especially if you take the power play away from the top line guys, and you say 5-on-5 goals per line, the fact that the fourth line is right on par with everybody else, and even better, more reliable than the second line, like, yeah, no, nobody would have saw that coming.
Charlie Coyle has 8 playoff goals this year for the Bruins. He had 8 goals in his career in the playoffs for the Minnesota Wild.
Right. He had 2 goals in the regular season.
Yeah.
For the Bruins, and I think the same number of playoff games. Think about that. So you're right. I mean, nobody, the third and fourth line have been so good since game 1 of the postseason.
David's in Florida. Hey, David.
Morning.
David.
I got a few technical questions, hockey questions. First, does the goalie wear his stick or the glove on his dominant hand?
What?
What do you mean dominant hand?
It
depends on which hand you catch with.
That's all. I mean, if the goalie is lefty, I mean, if the goalie is...
What does it matter?
The ordinary. Oh. I'm just curious. No, nothing. I was just curious.
Oh, but, it doesn't matter. All right, but, great.
But why, what advantage did Cassidy have by starting the fourth line? I mean, I would think you would just start your first line, your best line. What is it, a matchup thing, or what was his thinking with that?
He started his first line Saturday night. He started Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak. Mm-hmm. He has, on a number of occasions this year, started the fourth line because they are an instant energy boost.
Tone setting.
They go out there and they hit everything that moves, and you could see the entire team get an emotional boost from them. I think it's a great move when they do it. Now, the visiting team has to post their starting lineup first. And it'll be up to Bruce Cassidy tonight who he wants to start. He elected to start Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak on mm-hmm. Saturday because I think he felt they had something to prove.
Well, oh, absolutely. And I also think that it's one of those things where you can almost start whatever line that you want for whatever different reason, whether it's a particular matchup or just how you want to get the game going. But you look at the end of the night, you know, unless you win 7-2, the top guys are still going to have far and away the most ice time, and then you're going to be able... Now, some teams, their fourth line have... They play 9 minutes or whatever. This is obviously a different type of team than
this
that.
This fourth line plays second line minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a little bit different. So, I mean, you can start whatever line that Cassidy feels like. If you had to guess tonight, does he just roll back out with the top guys?
I would think he'd go back to the top guys again. 617-779-7937. Al's out on the Vineyard. Hey, Al.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
How are you?
Good. You know, I was listening earlier, Dale, when you were talking about that Game 7 against Tampa Bay. I was also at that game, and it was, like you described, the best hockey I've ever seen.
It's the single best game I've ever watched in my life.
And what struck me was, on Monday night, parts of the first period and the second period had that same kind of pure flow, almost no icings, no offsides, and that's when the Bruins are really at their best. And that's what we got them to see, controlling the neutral zone, keeping the puck out of their end, skating well, and winning puck battles. And it's encouraging to see if they can stay on that kind of clean game and that flow, I don't see them losing.
I have said on a couple of occasions, if the Bruins play their normal game, they win.
Right.
Every time. They didn't play their normal game in Game 2. First line especially didn't play their normal game in Game 2, and they lost by a goal in overtime. If they play a normal, everyday game for the Bruins, don't have to play their best game.
Yeah,
don't have to be
B minus game, you win.
They win.
That's what I think. And St. Louis has to play a lot better. Also, the Bruins just can't play like they did for most of Game 2. That's really the difference. If they play well, and they haven't had many stinkers throughout the entire playoffs. I mean, the Blues had a stinker. But the Bruins also capitalized on all their chances that they were given. So it's just, yeah, it's a tough matchup. Again, going into the whole series, it was the Blues are kind of like the Bruins, but worse. That was really that's how the matchup broke down. Ooh, they're deep like the Bruins, but not as deep. Their goalie's good. Yeah, the goalie's not as good. Like all these things, like all right down the line.
By the way, their special teams have never been good.
No,
in
that's
the
true
playoffs,
too. And that's been a yeah.
They were not good coming into this series. Right. They have not been good in this series. The two single biggest reasons why you've got a 2-1 lead is special teams and goaltending.
Yeah, and that even the first two games where it's split is because your special teams really didn't give you that big advantage. And then I mean, you know, Game 3 it was you can't do better than that. So even if it comes back down to earth a little bit tonight, they still have the advantage. They're still able to score a goal on that. And then you got Tuukka. Even if you're not able to break through on the power play, you still got Tuukka there.
You made a great point that in Game 2, the Bruins certainly were a big part of them losing. They didn't play well at all. We know that.
Yeah.
St. Louis can't play much better than they played in Game 2. They really did everything about as well as Craig Berube and his staff could have written it up, designed it. They did everything that they would want to do, and the Bruins played poorly, and St. Louis won by a goal in overtime.
Mm-hmm. And the Bruins, I mean, really had a chance to steal it, too.
It would have been a steal.
We'd be talking about a sweep, but they were – Pastrnak had a spot late third period where normally he finds a way to score a goal there, and this thing is really all but over. But, you know, credit to the Blues there. They were able to respond, and they played much better. In the 4 minutes that was overtime, that was some of the best hockey that they have played this whole series.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Our text line is 37937. Former Bruin forward Dave Poulin will join us at the top of the hour. He's a hockey analyst up in Canada. He will join us at 1 o'clock. Doug Vaughn, the poet laureate in St. Louis, will join us about an hour from now at 1:30.
Good. Looking forward to
that. They got some beef with us, which we're going to have to get to.
Yeah, this station's not happy with our station for some reason.
There is a...
What's their problem?
Or us in particular?
Yeah, it's us. There's some other guys at the station. These guys got some beef. I got some audio for you.
We'll figure that out
before we get there.
Okay, good.
That's coming up. 617-779-7937. But first, we have to trend.
To check the time as it's.
We have noon 30.
Noon 30.
It's noon 30.
It's going to be the Wild West at noon 30. Dale's already warmed up to noon 30.
No, I haven't.
You just said noon 30.
Well, that's what you call it.
Noon 30.
It's noon 30 with Dale and Keith.
Charles Glenn has been the national anthem singer for the St. Louis Blues for the last 19 years. He is retiring at the end of this season. Whether that's tonight or, you know, game six, whenever.
Yeah, it's probably his last game.
It might be.
Make it count.
He's been dealing with multiple sclerosis for the last 8 years. He said that is part of the reason that he's retiring.
Also, him having a terrible voice is part of it.
So, he sang the... By the way, I loved the fact that he came out wearing, you know, Bruins
colors.
Yeah,
that was a real treat. Thanks for the black and gold. What is he doing?
The black suit and the gold shirt. And I thought, well, that's
of all the
unexpected.
Choices, he's got to have other outfits. Or does he wear that every night? Maybe, I don't know. Maybe that's like a lucky
black. No, I'm looking at a picture
gold.
Of him in something other.
Oh, okay.
So the black and gold outfit threw me off a little bit.
Because I like these. I get excited to see what the anthem singers are in each one of these towns. The guy in Columbus was great.
Yes.
Leo! The whole crowd would get into Leo. Leo was great. He was fantastic. This gentleman, I was like, here we go. And it was...
Well, first of all, the strut
great.
When he came out onto the ice.
That was... Well, that I liked. I'm like, oh, we could be in for it here. I go, this guy's got some charisma.
Sassy.
I think the crowd's going to be into it. But the way he started out, Dale, I knew right away this wasn't going to be pretty.
So because... This is me. This is a thing for me. I'm real uptight about interrupting anthems and stuff. So we're going to play the whole thing.
He interrupted his own anthem.
Yeah,
though,
he did.
To be
well,
honest.
And
the crowd did too.
And we're going to play you. This is Charles Glenn's version of the national anthem from Saturday night, Stanley Cup Final Game 3.
What so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars knew the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallant. Oh,
They're not booing.
Charles Glenn singing. Jeremy Boy.
They're horrible. Not booing. They're saying home of the. They're all yelling blues.
It. Horrible. So. Absolutely horrible. First of all, he takes a break in the middle of the song. Then he comes back at the end and really makes a meal out of that final note.
12.1 seconds.
12.1 seconds.
I was timing it as we were going
along. Is that guy kidding me? And where did he go for half the song?
Sing along with me!
Terrible start. That, I was like, oh boy. You know what they should do on the jumbo screen? Just make it a sing-along. Have the bouncing ball like you're doing karaoke and just let the crowd do it. Let the crowd do it. That's fine. That guy, you're there to do the anthem, not start it and end it. That's ridiculous. And his voice is awful.
Well, that may be.
I'm no Simon Cowell, but he sounded terrible.
And perhaps that's something to do with the multiple sclerosis.
Maybe.
And I don't know the answer.
I don't
to
know
that.
Either. But yikes.
Look, the one time where the anthem singer absolutely positively gave way to the fans in the building was Rene Rancourt at the Garden post marathon bombing.
Well,
and
it was
one of the great moments I've ever seen.
Well, that was fantastic. Yes. No, don't. That's a different story than
totally
this.
Totally different.
This guy's probably going to do the same thing. Sing along with me? Is that?
Let me hear you, people.
Yeah, he might as well be. It's the same guy. Was that the same guy that did the minor league game? It might as well be. I was like, yikes. That's not.
Sing along with me.
Please. Please sing all the words. But don't worry. Don't sing the last part. I got you guys covered. I got you there.
Now,
I'm going to really walk around with it.
I'm probably not as critical of his anthem as you are, but.
What did you like about it?
No, all I tweeted
Anything?
Out Saturday night was one line. Todd Angeli is better.
Yeah, Todd's been great. Todd's
that's it.
Right up
that's
there.
That's all I tweeted out is Todd Angeli is better because I think he is.
Well, he is. There's nobody that would pick this other guy.
Please welcome Todd Angeli.
Much better. He is significantly better. He's been running laps around everybody. Now,
would you say Rene Rancourt is better than this?
No, maybe not. Probably not. No.
No.
No. And he makes it all about himself, too, at the end.
This guy held a note for like 4 minutes.
How many fist pumps did he do at the end?
He didn't. He shimmied off.
You know how I feel about Rancourt. No, no, no. This guy's
better.
I'm
trying to see the bar.
No, this guy's better than that. This guy's better. Where they strolled up to the thing, too.
Rene Rancourt never just dropped out mid-song and said, you guys take this over.
That's true.
Well, I think now that's part of the gig there. I think that's part of the whole
charm. They're told to sing the song.
Oh, they're told not to sing the song. They sing along.
Where's the other ones? At Chicago that they all sing? There's another place in the NHL where like the whole crowd sings the whole song. And I guess that's kind of their deal. But
yeah,
like,
but the
oh,
anthem
man.
Singer in Chicago doesn't drop out.
No, he also sings it,
he
right.
He belts it along with them.
Yeah, part of it is you also sing. You know, he was just like resting up for the end. He's like, you know what? I'm going to sit this one out, let the crowd go. They seem to have a pretty good grasp of it, and now I'm going to dive in at the end. My other question about St. Louis is they kept showing all the people in the crowd. So Pam from The Office apparently is a huge St. Louis Blues fan. John Hamm is a big St. Louis Blues fan.
He's been there all along. I got no criticism
of
John Hamm.
He likes the
team.
He's
been pumping up the Blues tires for years.
They also had Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Jackie Joyner-Kersee were also in the crowd.
Patrick Mahomes, who apparently now the whole deal is every time an athlete is shown, they have to chug a beer.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
What up, it's T. Kelce. Shout out to the Missouri side. Let's go Blues, baby!
Yeah, you play for the Kansas City Chiefs. Not
I mean,
the,
it's the same state, I
know.
Guess. So they rent those guys out. But at the same time, who are the Bruins fan celebrities? Do they even have any? Or celebrity fans? Do they even have any? I feel like it's just
Robert
like,
Kraft and Bill Belichick.
I was going to say, it's just Patriots guys.
And then a big fan of the States right now, Dave Portnoy.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, they show him a lot.
I guess those are the guys. So that's fine. So if you want to take Mahomes and Kelce and cancel them out with, you know, Gronk and Edelman or whatever, but who is our John Hamm Jenna Fisher? I don't know if we have one.
Well, John Krasinski is our...
Oh, good point. Yeah, so Jim and Pam, they cancel each other out. Who's our John Hamm? We have a John Hamm out there.
I don't know. Lenny? Lenny Clark?
It's Lenny Clark. Yeah. It's probably Lenny Clark. I don't know who
we're
it
not,
is.
We're not hip deep in celebrity.
No, really not.
Which, by the way, I think the blue-collar Bruins fans prefer anyway.
I think so, too.
The Wahlbergs don't count anymore. Mark Wahlberg tweeted out during Game 2 to watch Wahlbergers at 9 p.m.
What?
Yeah, he did. Yes.
He got destroyed.
Right. Yeah, he did. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely tuning into that. Let me skip the Bruins Stanley Cup final game to watch Wahlberg, an all-new episode of Wahlbergers. No. Yeah, that's tough timing there. That must have been in between workouts for him too. I'm surprised he was able to.
That was his 15-minute window.
That was right.
A tweet window.
Takes a little bit of a break to, you know, fire off some social media action.
I'm told on text that Charles Glenn sings in an R&B band at a local bar and probably is great in that
role.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure that it necessarily translates to the national anthem.
No.
Sing along with me.
Red flag. Red flag. Sing along with me because I'm not singing this whole song. Holy mackerel. No, thanks.
I didn't mind it as much as you did. I just didn't think it was as good as what we get here.
I think we've gotten better anthems throughout the whole playoffs.
Killing it.
I thought the guy in freaking Carolina was better. I don't even remember who that guy was, but he was better.
He had the slick back hair and the earring, right?
Yeah.
He looked good.
Just got off of his pickup truck, strolled in there with his boots on. He was ready to go. He's good.
Jerome's in Scituate. Hey, Jerome.
Hey, Dale. You know what? More and more, you're being the number one man at that station. I'm telling you, you're growing on me.
You're growing on me? It's only taken you 20 years.
Thanks.
No, I know. Well, he does everything. Dale, I'm telling you were even good in baseball. I remember when you were over in Japan. But anyway, listen, Rich, I got a problem with you today.
Yeah, what do you got?
That guy, the guy singing, okay, it was a compliment. He was taking something away from Rancourt, letting the fans get into the song. That's what that was.
Jerome, you can't take a break during the middle of the song and then hold a note for 15 seconds at the end. You just can't do it. You there? Did I stump him?
I know.
All right,
we didn't hang up on him.
I didn't hang up on Jerome.
No, no, we were happy to
He
continue.
Was letting you finish it, just like the guy let the people sing the song.
I was done.
Bill's in Revere. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Just want to say, I watched that game with a room full of people, Rich, and I thought that the national anthem was great.
Really?
You say give him a break in the middle. Yeah. What was wrong with that?
Where'd he go?
The guy has a good voice.
Where'd he go?
Where did he go?
Yeah, he should have sang the whole song, Bill.
It's a testimony to the fans. He did a beautiful job of singing it. I enjoy it.
You like them singing Home of the Blues at the end, or you don't think that's disrespectful?
That's disrespectful. Of course that's disrespectful.
There you go.
In all, the guy's got a decent voice. You're picking on him. That's crazy.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of it. If it's, you know, if I was on the American Idol panel, it'd be a no for me, dog.
Saturday night, I didn't even criticize him. All I tweeted out was one line. Wow. Todd Angeli is better.
I mean, I don't see how
that seems fairly self-evident.
I don't see who could argue. But then again, there are people that love when the guy takes a break in the middle of the song and just needs everybody else. I could do that. I could go in the middle of, hey, sing along with me.
And then don't start.
Just hold the mic up. Yeah. Go ahead, guys. Go ahead. Go ahead. And then I'll just walk off. Do a couple fist pumps. Make it all about me.
Give it a rip.
Mm-hmm.
617-7...
Hey, can you
this guy.
See?
Oh, that guy, yeah.
I love
he
that
should
guy.
Have taken a
that
break.
That guy was into it. Yeah, he needed a break.
He needed to not start.
Yeah.
617... Okay, all right. Got it, Jason. 617-779-7937. We'll talk to Dave Poulin at the top of the hour. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
So Friday, beaming.
Take Dale and Keefe with you wherever you go. Download the radio.com app. Now back to Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
As you heard during the award-winning Trending Now.
Thanks, Dale.
The Red Sox dropped 2 out of 3 to the New York Yankees. The only reason they didn't lose 3 out of 4 is one got rained out.
It would have been. Weekend. It for sure would have been 3 out of 4.
Probably did not look good. I guess you have to wonder if Alex Cora is pushing a panic button here, or is he looking at what's going on through the first 50-plus games and saying, we got to change something, as he shuffled his lineup around, put Mookie back in the leadoff spot. Is it an acknowledgement by him that, you know what, this isn't working, let's go somewhere else?
I think he's finally acknowledging that I was right. I was right, Dale. This is one of those things. I'm right twice a year when it comes to specific sports takes, and this is one of those times. When they said Mookie Betts wasn't going to hit leadoff, I said that was the dumbest thing in the world. Mookie Betts last year was the MVP of the league and won the World Series. You literally can't do better than that. He was the best player on the best team.
Yep.
And as soon as they won, you remember Alex Cora made some sort of comment about Dustin Pedroia, and he said Dustin Pedroia, when he's healthy for opening day, he's going to lead off. That'll be the only game that Mookie doesn't lead off. So even in the immediate aftermath of them winning the World Series, in his mind, Mookie Betts is going to lead off. Then something changed, and it wasn't just the combination to me, or it wasn't just simply Mookie Betts batting second and trying to get him more RBI opportunities, because that part of it on the surface makes sense. But how did you know Andrew Benintendi was going to be a good leadoff hitter? Based off of what?
I guess because he's fast. We think
he's a horrible base runner.
Terrible.
And he was great hitting second, wasn't he?
Yep.
And Betts leadoff, it's not for everybody. And the Red Sox have had good leadoff hitters. Like Johnny Damon was a really good leadoff hitter. Jacoby Ellsbury, although just for a few years, was really good in the leadoff spot. And Mookie Betts has taken that over. And even though he has 30 home run power, you're not wasting him there in the leadoff spot. Cora went on and on a year ago about how Betts sets the tone for the game. And this is, we're aggressive and we come out flying. So what the hell changed? Why would you take him out of there? Again, for him and the team, things couldn't have gone better. So it was like tweaking it for tweaking its sake. It made no sense to me at the time.
I understood the philosophy behind it. For most teams, your best hitter hits second. I mean, that's not necessarily an unusual thought process in Major League Baseball. But to your point, you know, if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Right.
And it wasn't broke, obviously.
Not even close.
I understood philosophically why he wanted to make the change, but a deeper dive into it, and you'd say, well, heck, he was great as a leadoff hitter.
Right. And now you take a guy who may not be comfortable as a leadoff hitter. You have him heading leadoff. It made zero sense. It clearly, it's not for everybody. Like, that is just one of those things. In those years previous when Ellsbury or Damon or somebody like Coco Crisp, when one of those guys was hurt, they'd have to go with somebody else. And a lot of them talked about it. They're like, they're just not comfortable doing this. And Mookie was. So I don't know why you would mess with that. Unless, was it something that Mookie wanted? Was he and his agent saying,
we
want more RBI.
Right, right.
We want more whatever it is. But guess what? He's going to get paid. He's still going to get paid. Whether he has 90 RBI or 100 RBI or 110 RBI. If he's hitting for a high average, the OPS will still be high. Bunch of home runs, steals, all of that. I just thought it was so dumb to do that. And it's one thing, if you want to go to 2 years ago, and at that point, Mookie Betts needed to move down the lineup because David Ortiz wasn't there. JD Martinez wasn't there. So they didn't have another legitimate power bat. They have that. And guess what? You also have Bogarts and Devers. These guys are hitting the crap out of it. So you already have a true middle of the order bat. You have three guys that you can feel good about. So Betts absolutely should be heading leadoff. But it's just funny how it's 2 months and all of a sudden now it's, you know, he woke up and he told Mookie Betts, hey, you're going to hit leadoff for the rest of the season and we're not going to debate it. So clearly the lineup does matter. And for some reason, he tried this experiment. And even then, it's not like he's hitting second the first 2 months of the year. He hit second for a while, remember? Then he'd move him back to first, move him back to second. And I think a lot of these guys kind of are creatures of habit. And if they're used to showing up to the ballpark knowing they're going to hit third, I think that kind of helps them. And last year, sure, you got to tweak the lineup here and there, but the top guys pretty much stay where they are, and I think it helps them.
Jen McCaffrey wrote a piece for The Athletic, the Boston version of The Athletic. The headline is, "It makes no sense to place all the blame for mediocre Red Sox start on Alex Cora." And I do have to admit, and I've heard Mutt talk about this, you know, his thought that Alex Cora is on the hot seat. He's not. You know, the blame that Alex Cora gets, because it's kind of what we do here. The manager for the Red Sox, the goaltender for the Bruins, And it used to be the quarterback for the football team. They'd be the guys who got all the blame. That ended a while ago, mm-hmm. The quarterback part. I don't quite get the people who think that the problem with the Red Sox is the manager.
I think his attitude was a problem at the beginning of the year. Think about last year. And it's funny when OMF asked him about, like, if you could do anything differently. I forget if it was last week or the week before. They asked him if he could do anything differently. And his response was, not open up on the West Coast. And I guess he's like kind of half joking, but give me a break. Right. Like, hey, Adrian Gonzalez, guess what? You have to play road games. And so if he thinks they've gotten off to this bad start of the year because they had to play away from Fenway to start the year, do you know what the weather was like here at Fenway to start the year? You're still going to have 81 home games.
Right.
So I just think the excuse making, like, he has that in him. Like, we would always blame, like, John Farrell for that. And by no means is he to that extreme. But some of his excuses that he has made, they're right there. And last year, we just never heard them, because what would you apologize for, or what would you make excuses for? They won all the time. They never had any adversity. This year, they have, and they haven't really responded very well to it.
Well, he's not going anywhere. He's not on the hot seat.
Well, no, but it doesn't mean he's doing everything
right.
No.
My point is the thought process that, you know, Alex Cora's on the hot seat. I've heard Mutt say that.
Well, you've only heard Mutt say that. Nobody else has
probably
said that. I don't think anybody else in the world.
I listen to the station a lot, and maybe that's what I'm basing it on.
Yeah, it might be.
He's not on any hot seat. The general manager would be on the hot seat before the manager would be.
Well, I think the general manager has made it more difficult for the manager, because who's pitching the ninth inning? Quick, who's pitching the ninth inning? Like, every night might be different. And I think it's so, like, you can really see the two sides of it against the Yankees. The Yankees have a lead after five innings, just five innings. They can go to Ottavino, Canley, Britton, Chapman.
Yep.
That's insane. Those four guys are all better than the best guy in the Red Sox bullpen. The Red Sox need their starter to go at least six. And then even from there, you're kind of piecing it together. You don't know who's going to pitch in at a certain time. The Yankees have that, and so now Cora in-game has more decisions than he ever had to make a year ago.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We will talk with former Bruin forward, current analyst in Toronto, Dave Poulin, in just a few minutes. Doug Vaughn will join us at the bottom of the next hour from St. Louis. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.